From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made a generation ago when Rochester came to view one of its streets in a particular light. And to this day, if I say the words Lyle Avenue, I wonder if that makes you think of its reputation. First of all, prostitution. Is that what comes to mind, and is that fair? How about drugs or other forms of crime? It's not easy to change a reputation for anything, for a person, for a company, for a neighborhood. Before you can change how people think about a place or a neighborhood, though, you do have to change the reality, and the reputation follows, sometimes slowly. There's an event coming up in a few weeks that aims to educate the community about what's going on Lyle Ave, a kind of Take Back the Neighborhood event. And Sheriff Todd Baxter will be there, along with leaders from city government, public health, neighborhood empowerment. This hour, we talk about changing a neighborhood, especially one that has a long-established reputation. My guests for this hour include Monroe County Sheriff Todd Baxter, who was just saying, your first car beat was Lyle Ave area?
It was, yeah, Lake and Lyle. And actually grew up in the neighborhood, went to Jefferson High School and school number 30 on Otis Street.
So you're kind of familiar.
Know all the back alleys, absolutely.
Thanks for being here, Mr. Sheriff. Molly Clifford is here, a member of Rochester City Council. Thanks for being back on the program here, Molly.
Thanks for having us, Evan.
Anna Valeria Eisman is here, Executive Director of the Open Door Mission. Anna, welcome. Why don't you let us know just briefly, and we'll talk more in detail as we go along, but what Open Door has been doing in this area since what you said last fall.
Yeah, so last fall, there were some photos that came out from Arlene Thaler, and she was working with some of the sex workers in the neighborhood, and she was showing pictures of essentially where they were sleeping or staying for periods of time, and they were mostly abandoned homes. And I called her immediately and said, how can the mission help? Because one of the things that makes the mission unique is our kind of freedom to be able to go in and find some where there's gaps in the system or in our community that we can try to help out. So we've really been doing street outreach since the fall with the girls, trying to get them into treatment, trying to get them into housing. We've actually, part of why we opened up some of our men's shelter beds to women was actually to try and help some of the girls that are staying there. And now we're here really just kind of as the next level to be a support for Molly and for the neighborhood, and whatever they decide that they would like to do, we'd like to help out with that.
Okay. Very good. And Michael Visconti is here, president of the Lyle Otis Neighborhood Association. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
All right. I'm going to start with Molly Clifford. Why don't you tell us what's coming up on Friday, June 1st? I mean, that's one of the reasons we're here. You've got an event coming up here that I know you want the community to be aware of.
Yes, we do. We're having a community forum called What's Going on Lyle Avenue on Friday, June 1st. And what we're really trying to do is bring stakeholders and community partners together to learn a little bit more about the history of Lyle Avenue, sort of the current state of Lyle Avenue and the neighborhood, and what people can do to help us bring the neighborhood back. When I was elected to city council a couple of years ago, I heard from so many neighbors, Michael being one of them, that, you know, back in the day, there used to be a lot of people working on this issue, and there was the Lyle 230 group that Dr. Doniger and Councilmember Bob Stevenson were very active in, and it really helped for a time, but then efforts kind of subsided, and now many of the problems are back. So this is our attempt to really bring some attention to the area and hopefully, you know, really revitalize it, hopefully once and for all. But we know it's a long-term problem, and it's probably going to be a long-term solution.
Bob Stevenson was really a walk the street, was one of the sweetest human beings you'd ever meet, and sincerely put his time and effort into this, didn't he?
And still is, and in fact won the Citizen of the Year award just this week.
I haven't
from
seen
the
him in
Police
so long.
Department. He's probably listening, Evan. I got to believe.
Oh, Bob, I want you to call the program, Bob. He's just one of the sweetest people and sincerely working so hard in this, so I'm glad to hear that. And I have not seen Bob in a while. But let's go back to the sheriff's, you know, your upbringing, Todd. What was the reputation as you saw it growing up, and then you saw it working as a police officer, and now as you see it in 2018, kind of take me through how you've seen it in stages.
Well, first of all, just give the history of it. Bob Stevenson was one of my teachers at Jefferson High School.
Oh, my gosh. Of course he was.
Yeah. This is a small world show.
All
we're
roads
talking
lead
about
to
that.
Bob Stevenson.
And we just talked to him the other day at the award ceremony. He's still doing court watch. He's still in the court systems watching. So what a community service person he is. So growing up in the neighborhood, you know, Lyle Otis neighborhood, it was a great neighborhood to grow up in. Mike Visconti across from me used to chase me around and keep us straight. It was one of those old Italian neighborhoods where we tracked everybody else. And then over the years, you've seen the morphing of the prostitute trade coming in, and ladies that were really stuck in bad places in their life. And I remember watching that kind of infiltrate the neighborhood, coming from the south, from Lyle Avenue, and coming down towards the Edinburgh Park neighborhood. Not thinking much of it when I was a kid, until a good friend of our family's, her brother I grew up with, actually became a lady that was working on the streets. And, you know, it was just a... That was the pivotal moment. I remember her, and I don't want to say her name, but I couldn't believe that was going to occur to this lady who went to Jefferson High School with me. And then early in my police career, obviously working at there's a car beat, we did a ton of police work, both on the John and the prostitution side of the house. And it was just a revolving door of arrest. I don't remember any, you know, try to break the cycle and the systems out, which we see today. And then, of course, Arthur Shawcross was... just coming to be when I was a rookie police officer working in that area. So we did a ton of work. And I remember some of the ladies that I arrested became victims of his crime spree. So, you know, it's always had that pivotal, you know, it's always been in the middle of my career. It's always been there. Now working at the jail, you know, it's a whole different paradigm as you're seeing these ladies coming into jail, and some are with kids, some are trying to get their families. It's just a great opportunity to work the other end of the problem now and see what we can do with these ladies while they're in jail.
Okay. And do you see... Should the reputation be different now? Is it fair when people hear Lyle Ave to think prostitution still?
Well, you started the program out. I think it's kind of like a reputation of a person. You know, it takes years and years to build it, and then it takes one bad incident to get rid of it. There's always a bad incident occurring in Lyle or Lake or something like that. You know, and we like to sensationalize that, or it's the butt of jokes. You know, we still talk about the certain lounges. I don't know if I can say the name of a certain lounge at Lyle and Sherman that people still talk about. You know, that it's still got that atmosphere out there. I was just policing it the other day. I took a couple calls for service on Lyle Avenue. And again, I didn't see any prostitution trade, but there was a big police presence down there. So I think it still has that reputation. I know tons of work from Bob Stevenson to back in the day. We did a ton of police work with the Lyle and Otis neighborhood, not only police work, but also trying to revitalize. So it's still there. In my opinion, it's still there. I think it's a great, great opportunity to, make a change, and that's what you see here is people trying to get together, and let's call it the reality what the reality is, and what can we do to build upon it.
All right, listeners, you don't have to be Bob Stevenson to call. It's 844-295-TALK. If you want to weigh in on what this effort to change the reputation, to change the reality, to improve life in at Lyle Avenue and the surrounding area, but I think that there are so many lessons that you can take from this effort to so many different neighborhoods and places. It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Some of our listeners, Anna, will say you have to simply just keep making arrests, and some will say women who are engaged in prostitution are victims themselves, and some will say it's complex and it's very difficult. I wonder how you view it and some of the work you've been working on with this.
Well, complex is certainly a good word for that. There are certainly some women who, you know, come into this as victims. They're literally being trafficked by abusive boyfriends or partners. Some of them have fallen into this work because they have gotten into opiates. The addiction issue with the girls in the streets is extremely prevalent. Mm. And so one of the things that we see, that we've been seeing, is the issue of women who maybe I'll talk to them one day and she just got, you know, beaten up last night and she's ready for to get go in and get treatment. Okay, that's great, but I can't find her in 2 days when that bed becomes available. You know, so that's been a huge issue that we've seen. And, you know, there's young girls out there. There's girls who've been doing this for decades, you know. So, I mean, there's such a wide spectrum of needs and of situations that have led the girls to these points that we have to look at it from a very broad perspective to figure out how to help them.
Okay, Molly, you want to jump in on that?
Well, I just wanted to say one of the great things that I've learned over this last couple of years with the Lyle neighbors is that there is an understanding on the neighbors' parts that there is no one-size-fits-all solution to this. They know that these women are in trouble, and they don't want to see them arrested forever and throw them in jail. They know that's not going to work. They know that the police can't do it all. So they, I think, understand at a much deeper level than many people do, that it really has to be a combination of factors, that there is a public health approach that we need to look at, that the neighbors have to be, you know, ever vigilant and really try and work together, and that law enforcement does play a role, but they're not the only ones that play the role here.
Okay. And Anna, is there any, for lack of a better word, typical scenario that leads a woman to be on Lyle Avenue engaging in prostitution? Is there something that more likely than not a woman in that position would have come from a certain background?
My first answer would be no, okay. But my second answer would be trauma and or addiction. And sometimes there's a addiction leads to the work, and sometimes the work leads to the addiction. And so we certainly see that both ways.
Okay. And this is, I'm getting at Michael's perspective as president of the Neighborhood Association in just a moment. I want to turn back to Todd here, because I'm thinking on the law enforcement side, I'm wondering, first of all, if you go back to your the opening patrols you did to today, has the approach of law enforcement changed at all to how to deal with this?
No, I don't believe so. There's a quality of life issue of a neighbor living on a street where the prostitute's working in front of her house, or there's a quality of life issue. People are always going to call the police. No one wants that occurring in front of their house. So we still get the complaints. We still have to do the enforcement part of it. But the way we do enforcement has not changed drastically over the years. If you think about opioids and our paradigm change there, where we have diversion programs now, and open access is open 24 hours a day on university, and the police officer's been trained to make an option, make an arrest, A, or if possible, take the person to a diversion program as opposed to down to Monroe County Jail. We don't see a lot of those diversion type programs for ladies that are stuck in this cycle. Mm-hmm. And it's an addiction too, whether they're addicted to opioids or they're addicted, they're stuck in the domestic violence cycle, or they're stuck in some other cycle of trafficking. I don't think we've changed drastically over the years. We still do prostitute details. That's what we call them. And we go out with undercovers and pick up the ladies and try and get a deal and enforce the prostitution laws in New York State. And then we still do John details, where we set out on corners and see if guys will come up and pitch the undercover police officers. Still doing the same thing that we did years ago from that. The only thing that's really changed, I think, and maybe just from my new job description, is that what we're trying to do inside the jail when these ladies are in there. We have women's groups in there all the time. We have, I've met with women's groups twice since I've been the Monroe County Sheriff, just talking about what we could do with some of these ladies while they're incarcerated, because we do have a great opportunity that no one else has. We have them incarcerated for months, sometimes at a time, that we can possibly change some habits and change some lifestyles.
Yeah, so in some ways, I think what I'm hearing from you when you say the enforcement hasn't really changed, in other words, if I live in that area, you can't let people engage in that activity. You have to pick them up. You have to do something.
Yeah, there's people trying to take their kids to the school bus, and,
sure,
and this occurs at 7 o'clock in the morning. And, exactly. So we have to do something. Yes,
absolutely. But once they're in the system, it does sound like the approach is a little bit more diverse than maybe it used to be.
Yeah, and I think it's a lot of room for improvement. Especially, again, putting on the sheriff's hat, I always look at the jail as just a great opportunity, and we've seen, diversion programs, courts have adjusted. We got courts that are now geared towards, folks that have problems that may not be law enforcement problems. We call them treatment courts, and there's different types. But it's an untapped resource, I think, is the best way to put it, the jail, of what we can do to get people out of these cycles that they're stuck in.
Okay. And let me ask Michael Visconti, who's president of the Lyle Lotus Neighborhood Association, how have you seen things changed, if at all? And what's, when you meet with a Sheriff Baxter or people in council, people in the community, what do you want to see done that might change this?
Well, first of all, I'd like to see help in our neighborhood. But I just want to go back a little bit.
Okay.
I've been president 31 years. I was on probably hundreds of John detail, prostitution detail, with the chiefs. I knew every chief, we were on everyone. We caught over probably 2,000 Johns and thousands of prostitutes. And the worst thing is that catching them, some of them 14, 15 times, the same one, mm-hmm, take them to court, see them go to court, and walk out the next day on the street. We asked for help. I started the court watch with Bob Stevenson, and we asked the judges to mandate them to go for treatment. I went to Park Ridge, we got beds for them. But the problem is that they walk in and walk out, and we have to pay for the bed for a month. The details that we do in John detail and prostitution details are getting smaller. We used to catch 60 or 70 guys at one time. Now we're catching 14, 15. They're still out there.
Is that because are there fewer Johns now, or is it just the fewer details?
Less details.
Fewer details.
When Todd was doing it, we used to do them two or three times a week sometimes. Now we're down once a month, maybe.
But you don't think that prostitution is any less than it used to be?
It's helping. It's decreasing because you don't see it out. I had the girl in my backyard in a tent. My boys had a little tent. They were only 7, 8 years old, and we caught a John and a prostitute in the tent doing it in my backyard. You don't see it as much. I get calls from people that had birthday parties, and they do it in front of their house. You don't hear that anymore. So it's getting better cleaning up.
Okay. Well, speaking of him, Bob Stevenson's on the line.
There we go.
So, Bob, I don't know if your ears were ringing. Everyone was talking about you.
Yes, somebody notified me about it, so we called the number.
Bob, first of all, thank you for doing that. And there was a lot of praise for your work here on the panel, but I also want to ask you if you have any sort of frustration or even any sadness that we still see at least some persistent prostitution in an area that you've worked so hard in over the years. What do you think?
Well, my whole attitude towards the problem has turned out that it's a twofold problem. One, they're violating a law, they're invading personal space of residents and so on, and no one wants to be, a car goes by, the window calls, the woman's going to the store, and assuming that she's a prostitute. So there were several sociological things going on, and we're trying to treat those. Then we realized, well, why, fundamentally, why do we have people in this trade, or whatever you want to call it? Mm-hmm. Basically, you do have people, they have problems, and apparently arrest and tossing them in jail for 30 days, whatever time we get, is not sufficient. And then we came along with a new court where you assume that the prostitute is both the victim and the perpetrator of a crime. In other words, how does she get to be where she is? Somebody violated her. And I can tell you from having taught for 30 years at Jefferson High School, 30 years ago that was, I remember having a girl in chemistry, brilliant girl. I figured I'll see her next year in physics. I never saw her again for about 3 years later. We were doing a detail on somewhere along Lyle Ave, and we didn't have a paddy wagon, so we're using the cages of a regular police car. And I was sitting in the front seat. I turned around and looked at this girl. I know you. It turned out to be a girl who was real brilliant. And by the time I had her as a junior in high school, she already had two babies, and she had three more since after I saw her. And somehow or another, we're not treating the individual who obviously has a problem. And although arrest and some time in jail may wake somebody up, we realize that it is not sufficient. Right now I've got, well, first of all, one person following this whole thing, we call it, mixture between drug court and human services. We have one judge who is following this all through, and I have one woman who is attending just about every court system, every court attendance that we need, Cindy Meyer. And she's doing an extremely good job with it. And she's also reviving a little bit of the old 230 group. People used to say, we used to call it the anti-prostitution group, and people go, tee-hee-hee-hee. So we said, let's call it the 230 group. And people hear it, and then they realize we do have a fundamental problem. We're trying to address it from multiple resources, but apparently there is no one good set of funding to treat the problem. You're not going to have 100%. I mean, we're not going to get results like drug court gets, 85% non-recidivistic. These people are highly recidivistic. And we're treating people who now are basically, most of them, as far as I know, as far as I can see, the ones I contacted, they're into drugs. And drugs are the great sedative to heal the mind. And the thing is, when you have a woman who is willing to do oral sex for $10-$20 a pop and has a $200 a day habit, you got somebody on the street 20 hours a day working.
Wow.
So it's a multiple faceted problem. And somehow or another, it gets a kind of a ha-ha, tee-hee. It's a problem. It's the world's oldest thing. But if you happen to live in an area where it's very rampant, this is not a desirable area to live. And as councilman for 20 years, that's how I treated it.
Hmm.
So it's multiply faceted, and I'm learning like mad. I remember from 2004 to 2007, we had 252 women, and 50 women were responsible for half of the arrests.
So Bob,
it's very highly recidivistic.
I don't want to weigh down your afternoon, so let me just ask you one more question, Bob, and I'll let you go. Highly recidivistic, a problem that has been decades now in the making. A lot of, again, like you said, so many of the same people you keep showing who keep showing up, and in some ways, sad stories. You had this brilliant young woman in class, and then you don't see her for 3 years, and you see the direction her life has gone. Is this first and foremost, poverty, economic based? I mean, I know there's not one answer that's going to change it, and everyone wishes there were, but is there something that you see that is doable here?
Yeah, so one big group that we always find is many of the hookers, probably close to 80%, as best I can figure out from that four-year study I did, they were assaulted as children, as young as 2 years old. When I say assault, it could be friends, it could be aunts, uncles, you name it. They were taken advantage of, and they consider themselves less than dirt. They have a zero self, how they feel about themselves. They're not proud of themselves. And it's very difficult to get them out of that rut.
Hmm. Well, Bob, are you an optimist that we will eventually see this neighborhood turn around?
Oh, yeah. Everything changes. All things change. You know, I'm a great advocate of Lyle Avenue. I'll put Ryan Cohen's every week. And you should take the whole family.
Bob, thank you. And thanks for the work that you've done over the years. Thanks for calling the program.
Okay, thank you.
That's Bob Stevenson. So one thing that came to mind for me, Sheriff Baxter, is that, Bob is describing, as everyone here has, the sort of the persistent nature of this problem. It's not necessarily, correct me if I'm wrong, it's not necessarily like a just dealing drugs problem where you can put a police detail or a patrol in an area that's known for drugs and people who are selling on the corner will go away. They see you and your officers, but they show up somewhere else. It's sort of whack-a-mole and you're chasing them around to different places. This has been an area that has stayed persistent with prostitution despite all of these efforts. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that difference exists.
Yeah, going back to what Mike said earlier, the number of details reduced and the number of arrests during the details might give that indicator that the problem is being solved. But if you think about the advent of social media and the hotels and the details we're doing around the hotels now, I think you've seen a lot of the morphing of the trade of prostitution into more of a social media back page hotels type thing as opposed to an overt.
How people find each other?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
You got to go back to the simple law of supply and demand,
yeah.
Right? As long as there's a demand and as long as there's going to be the supply of people willing to take advantage of that and make money off it. And it's not the ladies. These ladies, Bob just gave a phenomenal testimony about a couple of ladies. His study is riveting that, that they've been sexually assaulted at a young age. They made no choice in this. No one wants to grow up to be a prostitute. That's for damn sure. But the fact is, there's always going to be a supply of people willing to, create these environments for women, force these women into these situations, whether they're trafficking them or taking advantage because they were assaulted when they're young, or get them addicted to a substance where they have to work that off all the time, and this is a way to work it off. So I think you see the other end of it that we don't talk a lot about. And as long as there's John's willing to pay that $20, Mr. Stevenson, there's always going to be a supply of people on the other end or creating the supply chain for that. And I think you see the morphing of it, less ladies actually throwing, hands up as you're driving down Lyle Avenue, and maybe more on some of the hotels or some of the back pages of the social media world.
Okay. Councilmember Clifford?
I just wanted to say that we had talked to some folks in Buffalo where they had had a similar problem in Allentown. That was the area that people went to. And, you know, I think like the bank robber who said, you know, it's where the money is. People go to Lyle Avenue, both the sex workers and the Johns, because that's the reputation of the avenue. But one thing that we really ask the Rochester Police Department, who have been great supporters of this program, is to try and focus on the Johns more. Because, you know, we have found, and I think there's some national research to show that if guys in general think that they might get caught, they're a lot less likely to do it and go there. So having publicity around those John details and really trying to, you know, reduce the demand is a good way to go.
Donna in Fairport called in just to ask, where do the clients for prostitutes, where do the Johns come from? Do we know? I mean, again, that's probably a wide range, but...
When we picked them up, did a study, and over 50% of them came from the suburban. They know the area, and they come in from the suburban areas and come in. We got them from all over the place. And city ones of, you know, maybe 30-40%, a lot of them are more from the suburban area. I just want to say one thing that a judge a couple months ago did us a favor, and I think it would try to stop the Johns. We had to do, they were ordered to come to our neighborhood association meeting, sit there, and have us ask them questions. Why did you come to this neighborhood? Why are you doing this? You know, and after, I think they were ashamed, and they won't do it again. Because if you get them in one-on-one, and you have 20 or 30 neighborhood people asking them, why are you doing this? I got little kids, and look what you're doing here. They felt the shame. And I'm hoping by if the judges do that more, it would stop them.
And I saw in particular your reaction when Bob was describing his student, who had such a great future ahead of her, and all of a sudden, 3 years later, shows up in a prostitution detail. It's heartbreaking, isn't it?
Yes. And that's why, you know, so much of this is rooted in trauma. And so when we work, you know, when we talk to the girls, one of our, you know, again, our focus is on where the girls at, where do they come from, and where can we help them get to. And so, you know, what we're really trying to do is identify, you know, it's a unique need for someone in this environment, because there's so much trauma, and there's, whether it's pre-existing, you know, whether it's in the past and current, most of the time it's both. And so trying to get them to a point where they realize that they're worth something more than they are right now, more than what they're doing, helping them discover that identity, and having 5-10 minutes with them once or twice a week or once or twice a month, it's hard to get there. And they're hard to serve because most of them are not they're not eligible for benefits from DHS because maybe they're in, you know, they're sanctioned or they're not compliant with treatment. There's so many barriers that they have to receiving benefits and being part of the existing system. We really have to be creative at finding different ways to serve them because they're so hard to serve.
I know Jim and Arondecoit's been waiting. I want to grab Jim's phone call. Go ahead, Jim.
Howdy. I'd first like to thank Bob for his call. I thought that was fantastic, The fact that he brought up that it's a multifaceted problem. I got a lot I'd want to say. First is that I grew up in the city. I grew up in the 10th Ward, and I used to go over in that area regularly with my buddies riding our bikes, and it was a safe, fun neighborhood. It wasn't anything like it was, and I know after observing what's been going on for the last 30 years, 35 years, on my own, it's easy to see that the drug war is at the roots of this. The criminalization of personal behavior, of drugs, creating an open-air drug market is the roots of this. I mean, let's face it, we wouldn't have a prostitute problem in Pittsburgh. It wouldn't be tolerated, but there it's tolerated because that particular area is multifaceted, affected in the sense that it's poor, and it's an open-air drug market, and that creates an environment where prostitutes can go, and it's been accepted for how long now? And until we get to the roots of the problem that has created this, and to go off on Bob's point, to segue, multifaceted, it's concentrated poverty, and it's an open-air drug market. And those two things aren't just the problem in Lyle Avenue. It's the problem in my old neighborhood, in the 10th Ward. It's in the northeast part of the city. It's most of the city for that matter. And until we understand that and confront that and understand that we have to have a different approach to this whole thing, it's going to continue. We're going to continue this cycle. You know, there's an organization called LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and they've been in existence now for quite a few years, and it's made up of exactly what it sounds like, former law enforcement people, judges, attorneys, police officers. As a matter of fact, the leader of the organization is a former sergeant from Buffalo. And I think it would be highly important to have them on as a focus to understand what the roots of this problem are and how we turn a corner and how we figure out how to take a new approach to this thing instead of continually doing the same things over and over, arresting Johns and criminalizing prostitutes and arresting them. And until we understand the roots of it, nothing's going to change.
And Jim, before you go here, because I certainly am keen to hear what our panel has to say, starting with the sheriff. You know, you said so much has to change in approach, but where do you start? I mean, you've got a lot invested in the city. You care deeply about it. Where would you start to change things?
In the law enforcement aspect, to stop criminalizing the behavior, whether it's of the prostitutes, of drug use, that needs to stop. We need to stop throwing people in jail for hurting themselves and figure out ways. I don't have all the answers, but I do know that we can identify the roots, and the roots of the problem are an open-air drug market, a black market created by a drug war, created by laws, and in our approach, and simply thinking that we can just arrest our way out of things. And it's not working. It hasn't worked for 40 years. It's never going to work.
All right, Jim, thank you. Sheriff Baxter, I'll start with you. A lot there. What do you make of it?
Yeah, it was a great great points. I think he was bringing up great points for dialogue. You know, when we say law enforcement, most people think of the law enforcement officer wearing the uniform and the car pulling up. Let's not forget that laws are created by our legislators, and those legislators are creating laws based on what society wants and demands. So I have no problem with those conversations he's talking about. But at the same time, we also got to look at these are the laws of the land. You know, the 230 group, you know, 230 stands for a certain penal law charge, right? So, you know, this is what people want. This is what the community desires from that standpoint. So I am the type of person that loves to have the conversation. If we want to legalize something, let's just look at it as a research project, look at it as a study. Let's get all the facts out there. What would be the blind spots? And then how do we roll that out? But, you know, we could talk about the same thing, if you will, just we're not usually dealing with human beings like in the prostitute trade. But marijuana, we've had that conversation for how many decades about legalizing marijuana, not legalizing. It really has no teeth. The law has no teeth in it yet. My deputies are still chasing people, you know, over fences tonight for a bag of marijuana and breaking their knees or breaking their legs, and we're filling up the jails. And so as a society, we just got to have those frank conversations. So I kind of like what Jim was saying. You know, let's have dialogue, let's have conversations. But at the same time, if you walk out on a certain side street off of Lyle Avenue today, there's also possibly a lady working out there where the kid's trying to get on a school bus. So, you know, these are conversations communities and societies need to have, and legislators need to write laws that we want to then enforce. You know, we're enforcing the law now, and I think on the other side of what Jim was saying is you know, I agree on these. No one went down, you know, and said, you know, when I grow up, I want to be a prostitute. No one said that, right? These ladies have terrible lives. They're stuck in terrible positions in life, and I think we need to have some empathy and compassion for them when we do have to do the law enforcement part of it and see what we could do as law enforcement officers. But the comprehensive, as Mr. Stevenson said, this is a huge undertaking. And then again, we can always go back to the standard line. You know, prostitution is the oldest trade in the world, right? It's been around for years, but I go back to my earlier state in supply and demand too. So yeah, it's huge. It's a huge conversation.
Okay. Go ahead, Mike.
I want to jump in on it. The last caller, about 20 some years ago, I was on talk shows all over in the city, papers and that. We were talking about legalizing it. And we had calls in from all over the place. Why don't you legalize it? Why don't you put it someplace and make it, you know, legal? I says, fine. A lot of people from the suburbs called in, and I says, well, let's put it in Penfield, Webster, Fairport. Oh, no, not in my backyard. Where do you want it? You know, where can you put it that it's legal? You know, we were thinking, trying to find a spot if the courts and everything would be good they would have to have doctors check them out. They cannot, if they caught on the street, they would have to go to prison for a long time. And nobody came up with an idea to legalize it, you know. And should we? Look at all the diseases and AIDS and everything else we got out. So I don't know, but it was something to talk about. Should we legalize it or not?
Well, there's a member of city council here. So let's talk about all the different... Should we think about legalizing drugs more than they are? The sex trade, anything that you see should change?
Yes, probably. But to be honest, my focus is what can we do right now to help the neighbors in the Lyle Avenue area have a place where they can raise their kids. So I do absolutely think we can have all of those, you know, 20,000 feet conversations. And
you're saying, yes, have a conversation, not necessarily, yes, legalize?
I am saying, yes, let's have a conversation.
Okay,
yes,
I wanted to be clear, because I know that some of our listeners might have just said, oh, Councilmember Clifford just made some news.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I could do that even if I wanted to. So, but no, yes, have the conversation. But yes, let's focus on what's right in front of us. So that's really the point here. You know, another thing about Lyle Avenue is that it's a really long street, right? So it starts at Lake Avenue and goes out to the Gates Line and beyond to Buffalo. It probably goes beyond that. And so I think part of the conversation we want to have is, you know, this is another place where one block at a time, we really want to change things and make a difference. And I think we're already seeing some great development along State Street to Lyle. And we're seeing Tom Labou is a great, the Flatiron Cafe at the corner of Lake and Lyle, which does very well. And Ron Cohen's is still doing great. So if we can really take Lyle block by block, then I really do think that we can make a difference. Some great neighborhoods off of Lyle Avenue still where, you know, people are doing well. But do they have to be confronted with this problem on a fairly daily basis? Yes, they do.
Okay, so let's get that only break of the hour. And we had a listener named John who wanted to know, what are the businesses that are doing well and why are they able? So why have they shown the resiliency? Molly just mentioned some of them. We'll ask her when she comes back. And you heard conversation about how drugs intersect with these issues, certainly opioids. And you've got a sheriff in the room here who has been laser focused on opioids as a problem. So we'll ask Sheriff Baxter how he sees this sort of rolling into the problem of prostitution, the sex trade, and if there are more opportunities there to sort of try to get in and mitigate and deal with these issues. So some very complex issues. When we come back as well, we'll tell you about what's going on Friday, June 1st. We're here because what's going on Lyle Avenue is an event that's coming up. You'll want to know about that. Molly Clifford is a member of Rochester City Council. Anna Valeria Eisman, executive director of the Open Door Mission, that like so many places in our community, they just show up and do a lot of work. And they've been doing it since the fall in this particular case. Michael Visconti, president of the Lyle Otis Neighborhood Association, and Monroe County Sheriff Todd Beck. We're right back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on the next Connections, the ranks of adjunct professors at colleges and universities has grown, and we're talking to professors who are adjuncts about their desire to form a union, to push back a little, to fight for more when it comes to rights and pay. We'll talk about that in our first hour. In our second hour, an upcoming symposium on caring for caregivers. Talk to you Monday on Connections. Oh, welcome back to Connections. I didn't even know we were back on. Michael, did you want to pick up the point we were just making during our break there?
I was going to say...
Grab that and get right close to that microphone. Go ahead.
Okay. About 40 years ago, I lived in a neighborhood in there. We used to have street parties, picnics in the middle of the streets. Nobody locked the doors. It was a fantastic neighborhood. Mostly Italian area. We had bakeries all over the whole Northwest with Italian bakeries and pizza places and everything. And we had a lot of people move into that neighborhood. It was a booming neighborhood. Jobs were all over. Eastman Kodak was close. Everybody went there. You know, downtown, not even a mile away. So years ago, it was fantastic. It was beautiful. That's when I moved there. And it's slowly deteriorating, but we're trying to bring it back. And that's what we want to see, I think, all of us, to bring it back to where it was.
All right, June 1st, Friday. That's a Friday. Molly Clifford's going to tell you what's coming up before I get back to your phone calls. Friday, June 1st, what's going on?
So we're having a community forum, and it's basically a morning of discussions around what neighborhoods can do to address quality of life issues like prostitution, like drug abuse. Sheriff Baxter will be there and a number of other dignitaries, but we also have some panel discussions from each of the perspectives that we want to take. So public health, neighborhood empowerment, law enforcement, and then the idea is by the end of the morning, we'll have some stakeholder participation around building an action plan that we can work off of that hopefully has some short and long-term goals.
Show up? Just be there?
Just be there, yes. But you can go to whatsgoingonlyle@gmail.com if you would like to communicate with us about it.
Okay, 8:30 a.m. Friday, June 1st, and that's at the Lake Avenue Baptist Church.
Correct.
Okay, I'm going to grab a phone call. Jennifer in Rochester is calling from the Cameron Community Ministries on Lyle. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Just wanted to kind of chime in. This is our neighborhood. Cameron's been here for 35 years, and just listening to Molly and Mike and Sheriff Baxter talking about, you know, all the stuff that's going on, I just wanted to kind of say that Cameron is absolutely on board with making the neighborhood a better place. We are a community center who help kids. We're doing programming for kids K to 6th grade currently, and looking to expand that, really just trying to break the cycle of poverty that's moved into our neighborhoods. We are a safe place for kids to hang out and also families. We're doing adult development stuff, jumping on board of the opioid crisis, understanding that that is an issue. We are a place for Narcotics Anonymous meeting once a week now, and so we are here and we are supportive, and we hope that folks take advantage of some of our services here, just trying to help the neighborhood. We have a couple of things coming up, a resource fair, kind of saying all the services that we do here as well as all around Rochester. There'll be about 35 agencies represented for folks to be able to come and just get help, whatever it is that they need help in, as well as a peace walk on June 6th where our kids have organized a walk that makes the neighborhood, they want to take back their neighborhood, they want to have a safe place to play. And it starts at Cameron, goes down to the Lyle Avenue Library, and we just hang out and listen to kids talk about safety and their neighborhood.
Jennifer, where are you located?
We are at 48 Cameron Street, so it's essentially the corner of Lyle and Cameron, just a couple of houses down from Lyle.
I know you're working hard, and you got a lot of people involved there. Thanks for taking the time to call the program.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And Jennifer, I think, is an example, Councilmember Clifford, of people who are really invested in doing the work.
Absolutely. Yeah. Cameron does great work in the neighborhood, great community partners, and especially their support of children and families in the neighborhood. Really important. Charles Settlement House, too. You know, the Northwest, in some ways, is under-resourced compared to other quadrants of the city. You know, we kind of saw our transition a little later than many other neighborhoods. So, it's really important to support places like Cameron and like Charles Settlement House.
And she mentioned a lot of things, not the least of which was drugs, opioids. It's come up a number of times. Sheriff Baxter, first of all, on opioids, broadly speaking, even outside of prostitution, do you see at least a little momentum to kind of get for the community to get their heads around this? I mean, it's going to be a long challenge with this. How do you see it going right now?
I see momentum. That's a great term to put on. You know, I look at numbers almost daily. I look at trends. We're nowhere close to stopping the trend upwards, but I think we're slowing it down. That's my gut feeling. We're looking at statistics and analysis of that, of course. But boy, what a problem. This is the largest problem we've ever had in our lifetime from a criminal justice and or a mental health or and a public health. It's all that and then some, and it's in every neighborhood. And I think we're getting our hands around the education part of it. We're really pushing, you know, whether the district attorney's out every day, the county executive's out every day, the Department of Health is out every day. The police departments, we're doing 3 or 4 presentations a week, you know, just getting in every particular community across this county saying, look out, it's in your backyard, it's in your church, it's in your medicine cabinet, it's in your grandma's house, it's everywhere. Average age of death, 35. You know, last month we didn't have anybody below 20 yet. We keep on talking about 18-year-old kids. You know, it's an adult problem. So we're just trying to change that paradigm of the education part of it, that how prolific it is, but how dangerous it is. And so I'm happy where we're going with that part of it. You know, we're again, going back to Jim's statement, we're never going to arrest our way out of this problem. We got that. But we will make the arrest for people selling the bad dope that are killing people. And we'll try and divert the people that are addicted. But sometimes they need to go to jail, too. And sometimes their mothers call and say, please take my son to jail. At least I know we'll be safe. But yeah, in relation to this this event going on in June 1st, I don't know if the councilwoman mentioned they're also doing an opioid education part there too. So if you come out to that, there's a chance to, you know, get more educated on opioids and see what you could do in your particular sphere of influence.
All right. So I opened the hour by talking about reputation and stereotype, and Lyle Avenue has a reputation and a stereotype. And one of the things that would come to mind for me is my guess is very few women that you pick up in this trade are clean, and that's maybe fair or unfair. I don't know, but is that generally speaking? That's true, Anna, yeah?
Yeah, almost every one of them.
Okay, and how often now are we seeing opioids?
I think you're seeing opioids more often than not, but back when I was policing Lake Avenue, 340 Lake, I can name three or four ladies that I used to deal with nightly, and they were addicted to heroin back then. It was just a different type of heroin. It wasn't the deadly heroin that we're seeing today, but they were addicted to heroin back then, too. So, again, these ladies have difficulties, got trauma in their life, and people are taking advantage of it. And one of the things is get them addicted, and they'll work for you forever.
Wow. Wow, Anna?
That's a huge part of it. Girls that will just end up in a relationship with somebody who gets them addicted and then puts them to work. I mean, it happens all the time. And even in the houses and the abandoned homes where the girls are staying, in the yards and in the houses, you know, you can kind of crawl into, you know, where some of these places are. They're just littered with needles.
Yeah, and look, if you really want to have that conversation, listeners, about legalization, it's probably its own separate conversation. I'd like to be more prepared for it. But here's Jessica on Twitter saying, the problem with legalizing the sex trade is that it becomes nearly impossible to identify and protect women who are being trafficked.
Exactly.
You agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, and that's not something I've studied or considered much, but it's a point worth considering. Thank you, Jessica, for that. Molly, you mentioned some of the businesses.
Right.
And John was asking about, well, there are some businesses that have sort of persisted, and why? Is there a reason that we've seen some kind of hang in there and really still find a way to do well?
You know, I think we've got some businesses that are really committed to staying there, and they are good neighbors. Smoke and Joe's is another one. I mean, that place has been around for a while, still rocking after all these years. And Joe is very committed to Lyle Avenue and all of the people who work around that neighborhood and the residents, and he watches out for people. So there are. We have great city partners. The fire department, Engine 5 on Lyle Avenue, greatest group of guys, and they care deeply about what's going on in that neighborhood. The library, big part of the Lyle Avenue neighborhood. But we also have, you know, it's very close to Rochester's manufacturing center still along Mount Reed. So we have Buckingham Properties as an industrial park there. There's still a lot of jobs in the neighborhood, you know, farther west. But again, if we can, you know, approach it block by block from the west and block by block from the east, you know, I think we can make a difference. That's really the hope.
And I'm thinking about the anti-poverty initiative and just the conversation about where jobs go. Is it hard to convince anybody to set up and create new jobs in areas now that have these reputations?
I think we would have to say yes. And we do have business owners who, you know, really hate calling the cops as much as they do because they want their customers to be safe and not to be harassed when they come in and out of their stores. So it does become problematic. But, you know, again, with our community partners, hopefully we can make some progress and address that.
I wanted to ask the sheriff before we lost the hour. We've talked a lot about the women involved. And, you know, Michael brought up John's. Bob Stevenson has done a lot of work there. You've talked a little bit about it. But do you agree that if we're going to be hard on anybody, be hard on the Johns in these trades? And Michael talked about shaming, the feeling that people have once they're sort of outed in this way. Is there an effective way, in your view, to deal with Johns?
Well, yeah, and again, that's going to be let's get too deep into this, but the male tendency, right? The drive there is always there, and some people fulfill it different ways. You know, they're making a conscious decision to drive down on Lyle Avenue or Lake Avenue or another neighborhood anywhere, or go to the local hotel, as we mentioned earlier. They're making a mental decision there that, you know, the risk versus the reward. They know there's a chance that could be a female police officer on the other end of this conversation, but they're still taking that chance. So what on the other end of it? is going to stop them from making that decision. There's obviously some mental health and some marital things, and then we can talk about that. But, you know, your name ends up in the newspaper the next morning and you're a professional, you're probably not going to drive down Lyle Avenue and take that risk. It's not a risk versus reward you're willing to do. So I'm a firm believer in making these people pay back. I like what Mike said earlier, you know, of the judge unique concept, to go down in a neighborhood and explain to them why you're destroying their neighborhood. And we'll keep you out of jail for a couple of days. We'll make the even trade on that. That's a great idea. And some of those people have a conscience that they won't come back. And, you know, there are young kids trying to go to school in that neighborhood. I shouldn't be doing that in that neighborhood. So many different ways to look at it. But, you know, supply and demand, we'll go back to the philosophy one more time. And if we can slow down that demand in this neighborhood, you won't have such an overt problem in the neighborhood. You can then start building the neighborhood back. So long answer to your question. Yeah, we used to do it years ago. You know, we published all the names in a newspaper and we're doing all those details. I thought it was pretty effective.
Mm. Down to our last couple of minutes. Anna, I know that you and the organization at Open Door have been doing this work now, and no one wants you to have to do this work. We talk about reputations. I mean, is it, in your view, is it 3 years, 5 years, 10 years? I mean, what's realistic for us to kind of say, hey, we're all going to work together from various aspects here, but there's going to be a time where we don't need to do this anymore. Things are going to change, but it's not going to happen next month. What's realistic, do you think?
I have no idea.
It's hard, isn't it?
It's hard, and that's why the work that we're doing, again, is to support what the neighborhood decides to do. And namely, right now, we're really trying to just get to know the girls and get to know the needs so that we can, you know, better understand how to best help them and serve them. You know, one of the things that we know, the last time I spoke with the lieutenant who's been working the details in the neighborhood, and I might get the numbers wrong, but I know I'm close, and he said that in the past 6 months, there's been maybe four details or so, and about 60 women arrested, and only a few of them were duplicates. So the numbers are very, very high. And that's just who's been arrested. That's not who's there and hasn't been arrested. So we just know that there are a lot of women in this neighborhood who do need to be served better.
And down to our last few seconds, is it hard for them to hear, or do they have to get their head around the fact that people actually care about them?
Yes.
You're showing love for
Absolutely.
Them.
It took weeks before, and months even before, I would get to the point where, you know, I could, you know, I would walk the streets and walk the alleys and start to, you know, just introduce myself. And but it took a long time for them to get to know and to get to trust me and to, you know that this was a safe place, safe person to talk to.
It's so important what you're doing. Thank you for doing that. It's Anna Valeria Eisman. Michael, you got about 10 seconds.
Okay,
final point.
Fast. We're doing a safety thing for our neighborhood, giving away free solar lights for the houses. You got to be a homeowner in our neighborhood, you get a free solar light. Thank you.
All right. Michael is the president of the Lyle Otis Neighborhood Association. Everyone rooting for that change to happen. Thank you, Michael. Thanks for doing the work.
Thank you.
Molly Clifford, they'll see you Friday, June 1st, 2018. That's coming up in just a few weeks for this event. What's going on Lyle Avenue? Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
And Sheriff Baxter, always good to see you. Thanks for the work you're doing as well.
Likewise, sir. Thank you.
John Andrus, engineer. Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon and a great weekend. And we'll talk to you Monday on Member Supported Public Radio.